Welcome to the Unlimited Creative Podcast, Owning Your Uness. My name is Renee Kitson, and I'll be sharing different perspectives on what it means to be a multi-talented creative as I highlight resources and voices that could aid you through your inventive journey. For today's episode, we'll be talking about design thinking. Design thinking is generally defined as an analytic and creative process that engages a person in opportunities to experiment, create and prototype models, gather feedback, and redesign. This process includes empathy, or to empathize, define, ideate, prototype, and test your concept that you might have in mind. Today's guest definitely has a lot of knowledge in this area. His name is Corey Solomon, and he is a lead UX designer at the National Commercial Bank of Jamaica Limited. And when we say UX design, we're talking about user experience. He also worked within Sagicor Group, Jamaica Limited, within the same area, and has basically performed as an ultimate creative, as an art director at CGR Communications. He's also a creative director of Blackbird Media. I've also seen where he and his wife have supported other creatives, whether it may have been through using their publication at that time, to showcase what was really happening within the art world within Jamaica. This definitely shows that he has an interest within creativity, as it all comes back down to building the creative community. And he's definitely a family man as well. As we're about to delve into the world of design thinking, think along the line of how it is that you can use this process to engage others in this discussion. So join in on this conversation. Definitely share this link, podcast, to your friend so they too can be on the in of understanding what it means to use this process to basically solve issues that are around you. Let's hear Corey as he discusses what his concept of creativity is.
Let me just put it this way. Creativity is human-centered. So being able to understand a situation and create a solution that will be beneficial and useful for people.
Wow. I feel like that was like a very magical definition, because like you said, it's around people, human beings, and their concepts and their livelihood, how they live. Magical, man. You're magical. All right. So how it is that you got into this realm of just being a UX designer? And, you know, how do you feel like this specific field influences, you know, the Jamaican sphere of what design is?
Okay. So as a UX designer, I see it being like a great field to be in, especially for Jamaica right now, because Jamaica is on the cusp of transitioning, like fully transitioning into a digital space. And as UX designers, one of the things that is there should be dearest to our hearts is being empathetic. And empathetic meaning that, you know, you understand and you meet or customers' needs or a client's needs. That's actually very important, because just being able to actually understand what it is that they need is one of the roles of UX. You know, once you start doing things because you feel it's hot, because you see it trending, it may not be the right approach. And you'll hear me say this over and over in our conversation: focus on the user and everything else will follow. UX is, you know, it's amazing. How is it that I transitioned into the field? I worked at RGR as well as CGR. RGR Communication Group, as some of your listeners will know, is and viewers, is a communications group that's focused on both audio and video, TV and radio. CGR, so is a bit different, which focuses on advertising. When you mix both of those together, you know, this is where I realized that, you know, I shun Working at CGR allowed me to immediately like ramp up my design skills, because you work at an advertising agency, nothing bad comes out of that. That means that your portfolio shot. Like, even if you don't want to, it's going to be great, because the advertising agency has a responsibility to meet their business needs as well as their clients' needs, ensuring that, you know, quality work comes out. That forced me to be a better visual designer. I didn't start understanding the role as a UXer until like I worked with a client, which I can't disclose the client. But one of the things that I did going into that job was, I thought that, you know, as a visual designer, they asked me for something, I got this. So I, you know, shut it up and whatever it is. And they go, no, you missed the target completely. Why did I miss the target? Because I wasn't empathetic. I wasn't meeting their people, their solution. So I had to, you know, go back, drawing board. And this is where, you know, the design thinking methodologies came about, where what I do is use the Stanford D School approach, which is a 5-step process. Empathize, define, ideate, prototype, and test. And I will go through all of them in our conversation. That first step, that empathy, because I was just like, big designer coming out of RGR, coming out of CGR, I got this, shut it up, boom. Like, I've never felt so embarrassed, because, you know, I go into pitch and say, hey, you know, I got this. And I'm like, looks good, but no. So again, as I said, empathy, understanding customer needs, and that means that, you know, you need to observe them, be in their situation, understand their pain points, and then from understanding these pain points, then you can actually define the problem that they're having. I didn't define the problem. I just went straight into solution, which was clearly my solution and not their solution.
Wow. I think that was mighty deep, you know. Made me just want to question, like, can you use this process of design thinking within your everyday life as an individual, even though it's as though you're going to empathize with your customer or your audience or your client? How does it relate to you as an individual and using this concept within your daily life?
Yeah, as an individual, yeah, it's definitely something that you can use. I don't know. Give me a scenario, and let me try and see if I can piece it together.
All right. Cool. Good. Thank you for that, because we're gonna roll into our next segment where I did a bit of research on like some of the issues that creative entrepreneurs have, right? And this organization called Nesta. Which is like a nonprofit organization that collects data and aid creatives with resources, had this blog, and the title of the blog is 4 Common Challenges Amongst Creative Entrepreneurs. And it's written by Philip Page. It says, 1, lack of confidence. 2, imposter syndrome. 3, understanding financials. 4, needing ongoing support. So like, me and you are creatives, we live this. Now, if you could select one of these challenges that creative entrepreneurs face, how would you use the process of design thinking to address one of them? And I know it's not going to be like, you know, the most researched out, but it's more along the line of like getting the listeners to understand what it really is.
That article is actually really interesting, because the fact that they would have highlighted these 4 challenges, that means that, you know, there has to be a bit of research that was done prior. And this is through understanding designers on a whole. You know, you categorize them, you see how is it that, you know, what challenges is that they have? Clearly, you know, we have much more challenges. But when you look on situations like imposter syndrome, something that I have struggled with right now, there are so many things that I would like to do that I don't do, because I go, oh my God, what if I say the wrong thing? What if I miscommunicate something? I was actually having a conversation with my manager just last week, and he said, hey, Corey, just do it, because the worst that can happen is that somebody corrects you and you learn from it. And then I go, I mean, when you put it that way, clearly it makes so much sense. Just do it. In relation to how we approach our finances, that's actually something that is clearly a wider conversation to be had. You know, if we had like a guild in Jamaica that focused on how is it that we go about pricing or designs, from something as simple as like a business card to as big as a website or a mobile application, how is it that we approach costing? That's actually very important, because what you may end up realizing, which is something that I am disgusted by actually, is you have a company that selling graphic design services, anything you want, for $1,500 or more. And then you have a more established company that's putting out quality work. But, you know, it's clearly a bit more expensive based on the effort that is put in. And clients would go, hey, but I can get it for cheaper. The fact that they say that, you know, is clearly a challenge.
A while ago, you basically just highlighted like a second step of design thinking, which is like defining the problem. And you're saying, like, you know, before that, they would have to definitely just research and understand their perspective for them to even come to define those problems. Then how it is that, let's say we're talking about along the line of like imposter syndrome within my daily life, if I could have some level of self-love and be empathetic towards myself, may have self-love. And I recognize within myself that, all right, then I need to build my level of confidence and know that I'm worthy within this space. To how do I use ideation within the third step of design thinking?
Okay, so as it relates to self-confidence and feeling and having imposter syndrome, ideation is actually very important, because once you would have defined that, hey, you know what, I may not like public speaking. I may not, I may say the wrong thing. I don't want, you know, negative criticism. You arm yourself with these tools, these things that, you know, will allow you to address the situation a bit better. So, you know, as we spoke about defining the problem. So you've defined that, you know, we have imposter syndrome. Cool. How is it then that, you know, we can, as I said, arm ourselves. So, you know, we probably start jotting down points like, all right, let me walk with sticky notes. And I actually, you know what, let me just do it from this perspective, because I have had and still do have this situation where one of my best friends are right next to me, notepads.
Wow.
Always, like, I mean, like, it's my lifesaver. So what I do is I create like a foundation of what it is that I want to speak about. I keep in that general circle. If I do have like questions and a question and answer that comes out of that, then I find probably a unique way of reverting or matching what the person would have said back to a point that I can relate to. So arming yourself is something that, you know, is necessary. And arming yourself in the case of ideation is find multiple ways that, you know, works for you. What works for me may not work for everybody else. It could be a case where, you know, you have pointers on your hand. And whenever, you know, you jot it down on your hand, and whenever you speak it, you know, you use gestures and you glance on your hand just to, you know, whatever works for you. It could be a case where, you know, you have a PowerPoint document, and this PowerPoint document has notes at the bottom that, again, nobody sees. This form of ideation is what is actually very important in design thinking, because it allows you to have multiple solutions to this one problem.
No. So as you have this multiple solution in place, like, is it that you're going to then take a step to like figure out like which one kind of works, which one doesn't kind of work, or?
Yeah. So what happens in design thinking, which I should have shared first, you know, it's a 5-step process, which is empathize, define, ideate, prototype, test. However, it's not a linear process.
Oh, really? What you mean? Can you go deeper into that? What do you mean by that? Like,
so what I mean by that is you can create a solution in the ideation perspective. And then when you go about, say, testing it, you realize that, man, you know, I missed the target. Let me go back to the define. Or let me go back. Yeah, let me go back to the define and see what is it that I probably would have missed. I have a solution, but did I define the problem correctly? Or go back to empathize and say, all right, fine. Let me go back and see how I can empathize with people with public speaking issues or just, you know, whatever issues it is. And then once you've identified this problem, then you can go back to ideation. But again, it's definitely not a linear process. When you get to that last step, which is test, that doesn't mean that you're complete, because you can refine what you've done. Now that you've felt comfortable in this position where you don't feel like you have imposter syndrome anymore, it's now an opportunity for you to better this skill set. How is it then that, you know, you can be a better public speaker? How is it then that you feel more comfortable in your craft?
Even as like a perfectionist, which is mostly some of the reasons why we have issues regarding self-sabotage, because like we want to just do it right now and know so we'll be good now, right? So like even as it goes to like the other part, the other step, which as you said, doesn't necessarily have to be the next step, which is prototyping. Like it's like you're thinking along the line, like if we reach this far, should I really go back? And I already reach yourself and make the mock up them, and I already reach right yourself and put it in a way that seems presentable. But get deeper into that.
Yeah, it is a heavily iterative process. And one of the things that I like to share with my team is that they should share early. I have a team of 8 designers, UI UX designers. I love them to death. And one of the things that I try and emphasize with them is that share your process early. While people see that end result, I care more about how you got there. Because, you know, when you start doing user research, when I know that for this customer journey that you're trying to address, not the entire problem, but just a specific journey, if I hear that, all right, fine, you know, I have done 8 usability research sessions, that means that, you know, you give a shit about these people who you're actually trying to solve. You know, when you just go, all right, you know, I'm going to talk to one user and, you know, this is the solution that I came up with. I know that clearly, you know, it may not be the best solution, because you need at least 5 to 8 people to get feedback. Clearly, you're going to need more depending on the solution that you're trying to create. But you need the voices. You need to understand and empathize with the challenges that they have in order to create the solution that works best for them. And not because it works in one space, that means it's going to work in another. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. And that is also a challenge that most designers would face. And it's similar to what I would have said prior, where, you know, I'm a designer, I've done this before, let me just shut up this. And then, you know, I missed the target. If it's a case where like designers are focusing on creating a mobile app, like say, you know, yeah, whatever mobile app it is, you do it in Jamaica and you're like, oh, cool. You know what? I it's successful. And then you go to Germany. And you're like, you know, but I did this in Jamaica before. So, you know, I mean, it's supposed to be the same thing, you know, easy peasy. Shut it up, more than likely it may not meet the Germans' needs, primarily because culture changes, communication changes, how people interact with spaces changes. All right, so I'll take it a bit further. So in relation to Agile Man, I mean, what do jelly men do? Provide jelly, right? And coconut water. His problem could be he has an influx in customers. How can he provide more coconut water faster? As opposed to spending possibly, say, a minute to two to hole in and cut in that jelly and then pouring the water out. A solution or a more empathetic solution could be a case where, you know, he finds a faster way to provide this the water to the customer. I know I'm imposing, but it could be just a case where, as opposed to even using a machete, you could have like a corkscrew that just goes straight through the coconut and pours out the water, and that can be done in a shorter time. But most times, I mean, all the times, it really should be a case where you lead with the problem first, understanding what is this problem that the person has, and ideate solutions, understanding what it is that can be done. That solution that I would have recommended is something already in production. However, there are multiple ways to skin a cat. There are multiple ways to ensure that you meet the core need of users. And in this case, you know, again, it could be a case where you just have a sharper machete. It could be a case where, you get a secondary person, one person that cut the coconut, passes over to another person who poured the jelly water, another person who cut it to provide the jelly. So, you know, there are multiple solutions. So while you may have core features that still stand out, the most important thing is ensuring that you interact with these people who you're creating a solution for. You realize that things may be a little different. So it has to be human focused. You focus on the user, all else will follow.
You know, one of the stages of testing is just to evaluate. Does this work? Is this valuable? Will this actually function within this specific environment? And you just said environment correlates to like culture, and culture itself is ever changing. And so it can be Jamaican culture. It can be like, as you say, in Germany, or a pandemic might just pop off. COVID-19 might just hit in the midst of 2020. How did COVID-19 impact your journey as a creative, and knowing that you have been focusing and narrowing down on UX design? How did that affect you in your process, in work, or probably just trying to navigate the realm of the different changes that were happening because of COVID? What happened when the pressure just basically just pop goes away?
So the two standout ways that it has impacted me, I'll go with the easy one first. Have to physically interact with people. In a pandemic, you would realize that, you know, that physical interaction has lessened. And what we end up having to do is focus on a virtual interaction. While that may not be bad, one of the things that we as UX designers take into consideration is while we listen, we actually observe what our users are doing. So when I have a prototype and I say digitally or virtually, hey, Renee, click through this prototype and see how you feel about it. While you're telling me, I think what your actions are much more important than what you are saying. Because what you will realize as UX designers is that when you get this communication from our users, what they say is not exactly what they mean. So this is why user stories are very important. So as opposed to saying, okay, cool, go a little deeper, dive deeper and say, all right, fine, tell me what you mean about it. Share a time when X, right? Once I start sharing a story, you have a better understanding as opposed to just, you know, a click and a thumbs up. Yeah, man, this look good, or an emoticon or whatever it is. So that lack of physical interaction had a huge toll on me, because I realized that all my usability sessions are now virtual. When we as UX designers rely heavily on physical interaction. The second part of it, how the pandemic has affected me, is that I personally don't want to get too political right now, but I...
Drop it like it's hot. Just drop it like it's hot.
I remember tweeting that I don't believe any government institution should have a panel that does not include a UX designer, because we have to focus on human people. If you're serving people, serve people, ensure that you meet their needs. And I think UX designers would be very valuable in how we would have approached the pandemic, how we would have approached communicating to the people in Jamaica, how we'd approach sharing or giving the vaccinations, just understanding everybody before, you know. I mean, clearly, you know, it's not a cookie cutter situation where everybody is on the same page. But understanding where people are first, and not just saying, all right, fine, you know what, lockdown because me feel so. Definitely not a UX thing. It's not about feeling for us. One of the things that we like to do is, when we apply this process, we clearly avoid mistakes. And this is the design thinking process. So understanding how people, what are people's needs are, whether it be through fear, urgency of wanting to get back out, whatever it is, just ensure that you understand and communicate correctly.
As you just spoke a while ago, I was just even thinking about probably the process of how we even went about doing the elections during 2020. I was like, oh, that's interesting. I'm not going to say anything. I'm just saying it's very interesting. And then knowing that we had series of lockdowns afterward as well. And just questioning of the Jamaican culture and identity and how that actually relates to how people do things, you know. It's interesting. So does this mean that having a design thinking process within the realms of your team or committee or political realms or even just in the education system, in social spaces, things would be definitely better, or even regarding urban development, if it is that we're doing research and actually documenting, questioning, reviewing, documenting, questioning, and then moving forward. Probably they are doing it, but, you know, research probably would take money or time to do that. So, like, that's one of the issues I see right there. What could have been a solution for something like that then, if it is that this process is more about research and collection and evaluation, and that is something that is very timely and, you know, funds oriented, like, what would you say, how do you go about doing that then, if those are the core things that might hinder you from using this process?
Yeah, that's actually very important, because like, research does take a lot of time, and when, as I said, we are transitioning into a heavily technologically based society, that means that people want things right now, but do you want the right solution? Mm-hmm. which one do you want to meet? Do you want to invest the time now and give the right solution, or look like a puppy show and give the wrong solution and have people screaming at you?
I don't know. Sounds like a very difficult decision there.
So ideally, I would always go with the approach of doing it right from beginning. And clearly, there are times when...
Even if it costs.
Yeah, it definitely costs a lot more. In the past, as design was heavily focused on an instinctual approach as opposed to evidence-based, right? And if you lead with that knowledge, where, you know, you apply this design thinking process so that you avoid these mistakes, you realize that you get more focused and deliberate solutions. So I am not a fan of deadlines, and you will hear, I mean, people who I work with, they understand how, I don't want to say the wrong thing, but I try and focus on the process and not just the solution. Yes, I know at the end of the day you want this, but I need to carry you through this this process with me. I need to have you know, how is it that I got here? You would appreciate it much more than going, oh, cool, you done it, cool, thanks, and let me use it. Because of that, I rely heavily on communication. I allow you to know where I'm in the process. Sometimes people don't care. However, it's important to me because at the end of the day, you need to know the story. You need to know the effort behind it. And this actually should go for almost, well, at least I know this applies to like fine arts, in the case mm-hmm. where when you have exhibition openings, while people look on the artwork, they want to know the story behind it. People buy a process. People don't buy the end result. And I think it also applies directly to software. I mean, directly in my field where I'm in the financial and fintech industry, where I think the business itself buys the process. The customers want the end result. So they just want the needs to be met. They don't care how it is met. They just want the needs to be met.
Yeah, I understand where you're going. You're saying like at the end of the day, it's really about the quality of the solution, and that takes time. And it's mostly about the process. It's mostly about the process itself as well, and communicating how it is that you would have reached to the solution. What would you tell yourself 10 years ago? I don't know if you knew that you would end up in this field. What would you say to yourself 10 years ago as being a creative? What guidance would you have given yourself?
What I tell myself, this is actually something that I am going to borrow from a podcast, a design podcast that I was listening to earlier this morning. I would tell myself to push publish. And pretty much what that means is write about what I learn. And once I start writing, it builds that confidence in me to share more. And you know, you don't write about something that you don't know. So I would tell myself, push publish. That means that, you know, things that I'm working on, share more. If it is something that I have concerns about, you know, it may not be the best designs, at least you share. That's the only way you're going to get feedback. And that's the only way you're going to learn from this effort that you'd have put in. If it's something that you really want to do, own it, and share the process. People will also appreciate you much more as a designer when they see, actually as a person, when they see your growth, you know, they feel like they're a part of it. And this is something that I feel like I should do much more of. The podcast that I was listening to was of a lady, I can't remember her name. I think it's Susan Lin. However, don't quote me on that one. She worked at Facebook in the earlier stages. And what ended up happening is that she has a very similar story as me. She transitioned from an individual contributor to a design lead. And I'm like, this is me in a girl format. I realized that what she was saying pretty much is that, you know, as a design lead, one of the things that you will immediately notice is the portfolio, these case studies that allowed you to get the job has nothing to do with what you're doing now. You'll realize that you're in this new field where you're learning on the job. You're learning how to manage metrics. You're learning how to lead a design team, understanding individuals and not look on everybody as a whole. I was actually speaking to someone and they said, hey, you know what, I'd love to hear your story and how you would have, you know, transitioned into UX. I'd love to hear your story, how you are transitioning from an individual contributor to a design lead, how you create children's books. What's my passion? My passion, which I haven't spoken about any at all, which is inclusive design. They want to hear more about why is it that I care about people with disabilities and why is it that I want technology to be more inclusive to them, despite, you know, it being a smaller community. So all of that could be encapsulated in that hit publish, which means that, you know, if I start sharing all of this, you know, people feel a bit more, people understand, you know, what I do and how I do it and why I do it. So what I would tell them is arm yourself with knowledge, read more, and execute. As a growing designer, and some may call me a seasoned designer, I don't know it all, and I own that I don't know it all. However, I have the knowledge with me. You can't see behind me right now, but I have books for days as it relates to design stuff. So, like, for example, Articulating Design Decisions is one of them that I rely on, because as, you know, a designer going into a managerial space, you know, I have to know how to speak and what to speak about. Executive people don't care about what the design looks like. They care about what the metric looks like, how much people it reaches. So while I am speaking to designers about colors, space, shape, and all of that, when I'm relating it to the exec board, I go, well, changing this call to action from blue or from red to blue influences a 20% increase in clicks. You know, that's what they care about. My designers, I go, yo, changes from red to blue because red means something completely different. You know, red is harsh. You know, people try and avoid it. Blue is a bit more welcoming. So from that perspective, but just arm yourself with the knowledge, because at the end of the day, you can bounce back on it. Because you may not have it in your head, but you have access to it. And finally, we aren't machines. That's our conversation on its own, but, you know, I realize that I expect myself to be as great as this phone that I have in my hand. Mm-hmm. So I expect that I need to remember things. I expect that I always have to be on the ball with things. We aren't a computer. We would like to be. However, as we grow older, our memories fade. So use the tool, and, you know, set a reminder. Allow yourself to be nudged by this phone. Set a reminder to say, hey, you know what, date night at 6 o'clock. because at the end of the day, you may end up being too harsh on yourself.
Yeah. And
if you're harsh on yourself, that, you know, you'll fall straight back into imposter syndrome. So arm yourself with knowledge and push yourself to be better. And if you can use the design thinking methodologies in your life, go forth and be great.
So even though we're talking about design thinking, I know that creativity itself, design, and some principles of design actually can help us within the real world. So in my first episode titled The Unlimited Creative and defining that, I talked about my experience being at the bus stop, walking with a stack of cardboards, and the conductor saying to me, like, my girl, why you walk with your horse? Obviously, he's quite witty and funny. So because of his mindset of interpreting that cardboard as being something that could be formed into a horse, you know,
I was thinking along the line of how it is that your processes around design thinking, UX, user experience design, and design overall has just shown itself within your everyday life, or possibly shown itself within the most unexpected place.
So it's actually interesting that question, because I am actually fortunate to be in a space where I'm working from home, and that includes allowing my daughter to come in from time to time and see what daddy is doing. As a 6-year-old, I genuinely do appreciate the fact that she's able to understand, I guess, in some sense, from the 6-year-old mind, the technicalities of what I'm doing, which is, empathizing with people who I'm creating this solution for, designing solutions to facilitate a specific experience. And what actually surprised me is that one day, she said, "Hey, daddy, I want to create a book because mommy has a book, a children's book. I want to create a book because mommy's also making money. I want to make money too. But I don't want to do a regular book. I want to create an app." And I'm like, okay, cool. Zara goes missing for however long and comes back. Clearly not only by herself, but with the help of, her mom. And a bit for myself. This right here is a mock-up of what she thinks her app should look like. You can see a back and a forward button here, which I found like very empathetic, because, it's she in this 6-year-old mind now thinks, all right, fine, if you're going to be using my software or what my app, you can click next and back, to actually have that experience. It even goes a bit further because, when you click next, when you click next here, it goes to another page, which now speaks to read now. Again, another important aspect in understanding how she wants her users to receive this application, an application that, from my perspective, I look on it as accessibility first, where you consider people not wanting to read but have the story be read to you. Or it just could be a case where she's like, hey, you know what, I want people to read my story, or to hear my story be read to them. And for me, I think, as a parent, as a creative, it's heartwarming to see that, design thinking methodologies can be understood and implemented by everyone, no matter the age. And it's something that I genuinely appreciate, that, firsthand knowledge where I see where my 6-year-old daughter goes, daddy, this is what I expect from my application. So design thinking definitely, is an inclusive approach to understanding, empathizing, and creating solutions for our users.
Wow. What's the name of her book?
I can tell you now, because the title would have changed. The title is called If a Bee Can Read. And it just gives us a perspective of how what she thinks a bee would be doing if they could read. And yeah, one of the things that she held me accountable for, if you can see right here, you see October 2nd, 2021. She held me accountable because she wants to know that she can get this done before her next birthday, which is in September. Luckily, we are actively working on it, and we're pretty excited with what we'll have so far. I really shouldn't be speaking much about it because I don't like speaking a lot on things that haven't been completed, but we are pretty excited. I'm sure she's pretty excited with what is to come. And I would have been mindful of, not imposing my feelings, my thoughts, my what I do on a daily basis in her creativity, because a six-year-old creativity is completely different from an old foot like me.
Okay, I wasn't expecting that, but that is definitely innovative, and it says a lot about family support and how it is that you can influence children around you, because they're definitely observing you. I love that. I love that. So here's the last question. Give me a song that definitely puts you into the mood to create and to do.
Wow.
Yeah, it was like a curveball.
Actually, no, I can tell you exactly what song it is, right?
Okay.
But it just will show me up as a person.
Yeah, it's fine. We're all human beings here.
That's why it would show you up as a person, because you are human and you are a person. So let's roll.
So I am a huge fan of John Mayer.
Okay.
You know, when I remember, like, even in college, when people would see me with headphones in public that are listening to the rawest reggae or dancehall music ever. But in my head, you know, it's jazz and blues. I love I love listening to John Mayer. For me, my favorite song from him that probably, you know, gets me there is Waiting on the World to Change.
What? Just give me one line. Don't say it, sing it.
One line.
No.
Okay.
You're not going to grab me out.
Okay. One line in the chorus.
All right, fine, cool. Waited on the world to change. That's the one line for you.
Yeah, I'm going to easy. No pressure. So, Corey, thank you so much. Corey Solomon, thank you so much. Thank you so much. This has been very insightful and has really shown me how it is that we need empathy in everything that we do, whether it may be in terms of evaluation of our own selves, our own actions, and how it is that we can use empathy within our process as creatives, and how design thinking basically connects all of that together. It's all about the human experience. It's all about who we are, what we're doing, and just owning your you-ness or your community-ness in just one bundle.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I appreciate this. And I'll tell you, I look forward to speaking about design. I look forward to speaking not so much about myself, but how I've transitioned and look forward to sharing my knowledge. So If you want me to be back, just say the word. I'll be here.
No problem. Next time it might be a workshop, just putting it in the atmosphere. Come on now. Come on. Hey.
I mean, it's unlimited creative. So, you know, we're not.
We don't have no bones. No. All right, then. Thank you. And take care.
All right. Cool. Take care, folks.
I hope you've enjoyed this session. Follow me on Instagram at Renee Kitson for more inspiration. Remember that you are enough and that only you can be you.
Just go and own up your you-ness, though. Boom, bang, bang.